creating cultural awareness and understanding. This is Culture Click. Culture Click is written and produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University.
Kari Toring, author, singer, educator, runes reader, and self-proclaimed vulva, which is Nordic for staff carrier, definitely knows her way around the Norwegian culture. With over 20 years of research and practice, Toring combines her ancient Indo-European origins with her immigrant-era heritage to help others discover their unified folk soul through workshops and performances. Toring was also featured on a popular Norwegian reality show, Alt for Norg. I'm Anna Flores, and you're listening to Culture Click.
My name is Kari Toring, and I am represent the Indo-European traditions of my heritage. That includes Norwegian, Swedish, Danish, even Celtic and Germanic. The further we go back, of course, the less we are all separate countries and one major people. The Indo-European language was what first started me on this path to digging up my deep roots. But I did grow up as a mostly Norwegian American.
And you are you can tell me if this, I'm pronouncing this wrong, vulva?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And tell me what that is.
Well, vulva is an old Norse word, and it means staff carrier. So throughout the Eddas and the sagas and into archaeological finds, there is a deep history of women who are holy women, spiritual women, who would be a little bit like circuit preachers, kind of wandering and bringing the staff. The staff represents the connection with the world tree, which is part of our cosmology. We believe that there are 9 different worlds within the world tree, and we're living in Midgard here and now. And the staff carrying tradition goes back to the Bronze Age, which predates the Vikings by about 2,000 years.
What kind of responsibilities does this person have?
A vulva is, in our modern times now, as a staff carrier, I visit lots and lots of different groups, from Lutheran church basement ladies to the different heathen kindreds, which are reconstructionist religious kindreds, all sorts of different people of the folk soul, people who are interested in learning more about the folk soul. Some of the things that I do are ceremonial. I'll lead ceremony with vardlokkur, which is like a warding calls. I will sing from the Eddas and the sagas. I will read people's urlog, which is a little bit like karma, or sort of the whole entire genetic and memory banks and all of those things of who we are, that our ancestors made us. And I will help people with healing, in healing their threads of their urlog. I'll go into communities and help them sometimes sort out their intricacies. Everybody's urlog is a strand that creates a web we call the web of weird. And sometimes those threads can get tangled and confused. So sometimes a person like myself goes in with no perspective, just a fresh understanding of the group energy and make suggestions about how things might shift. And so there's a lot of different things that we do.
And how do you become a vulva?
It is, since it's such a reclaimed path, what I have done is I've written a manual called a Vulvastav manual. And I have started to use, since 2003, I began to use my staff as rhythm for singing the runes, and I developed an entire method called Vulvastav of using staff and rhythm and voice and singing galdr, which is to sing the runes and to sing poems of nature's energy, to learn those ways. One of the things that the staff carriers are adept at is being in what we would call seed consciousness. Seed is, it's a little bit like when you're an athlete and all of a sudden you get in the zone and your whole team is just like psychic with each other, or bands will talk about that when you're playing music. That's kind of like how it feels to be in seed consciousness. And you take that being in the zone feeling and you push it deeper and you align your body with the world tree. So I've developed training methods for others to do it, and I have a group in Minneapolis that is that I meet with regularly of about 12 to 13 women and men. But others around the country and in Europe as well are coming to it from different angles. Some have tried it as reconstruction, like they've taken Thorbjörg from Eric the Red's saga, and they've reconstructed what the ritual might have been like. And then through other kinds of shamanic training that they may have had, whether it's a sort of Harner core shamanism, or whether it's studying with other native traditions, or taking those other kinds of methods, have applied it to their ritual, their high seed ritual. And for me, it came up out of my martial arts background and a lot of the other energetic work that I've done over the years. And so for the last 20 years, also being in the Midwest, I mean, the folk soul is alive here through the immigrant tradition. So one of the things that I went to is the immigrant songs and stories, and I tried to find evidence and methods, and boy, I even found like charms for making magic butter, you know, things like that you can find when you're living in the folk soul that's already alive and well. So that's how I became one. People started calling me one a few years ago, and then I finally decided I better define myself that way.
And you kind of mix the old tradition with the new ritual.
Yeah, you know, I think of it a lot like spinning. You know, I take the threads that have already been spun in the old traditions, and I see where they have connected to the immigrant traditions. And there are places where our indigenous traditions were, Scandinavia was Christianized by the sword. So there are lots of things within our psyche as a people that have been carried on from that particular kind of a grief-making action, that oppressive, the oppressor comes in and takes your mother land, and it takes your mother tongue, and it takes your ancient ways and your old gods, and then it kind of applies the structure that it wants you to have. But those pieces, those old pieces, they sneak up in there. So I kind of, what I've done is just kind of unraveled the threads to see where those pieces might have gone and how they might have connected in. And then when I find them, then I can pull this sort of unspun stuff of the future out, and I can make it nice and smooth, and I can spin sort of a new kind of thread for the children to follow that ties the old and the new together. So we don't want to reject our immigrant past. It's part of our Urlaug, but we do want to mend those pieces that were disrupted and broken. So that's been my goal. So.
Can you give us an example of a word or a phrase?
Right. So, for example, my name then, to spell my name in runes would be, of course, in the old days, they went from right to left rather than left to right as we do. So it would be the kenas, which is the k sound, o, which is ansus, and that means the mouth of the river or the mouth of the gods. Rad, which means wheel, and then I, which is Isa. So Kori is my name, and it means, this is Kenas, it means to know. It means the ideas that she has are spoken from her deep well out into the world to change the way the world works. And then Isa is an ice rune, and it means that she freezes the things that she, or preserves the things that she finds good. So that's how my name reads.
Will you tell me about your book you wrote?
Okay, so the first book that I wrote is this book called The Runes of Human Journey, and it is basically journals, thoughts of mine of using the runes for over the past 20 years. A friend of mine who edited it, David DeYoung, he's like, well, just do a random rune pull and send them to me, and then I'll do a random rune pull and we'll edit this thing together. And it turned out to be this really amazing sort of ritually devised book. And then he said, this book is too big. I want it on my iPod. And so, yes, the ancient runes are an iPod application. iPhone, iPod Touch, or whatever it is. Anyway, so there's your full circle. It's so ancient that it's become modern. So,
tell me about your experience on the reality show.
Well, you know, my experience on the reality show was very interesting. When my sister came to me with this little newspaper thing at Christmas time, she said, "Oh, they're doing this thing, and it sounds like just something you should do." Well, you could not have been to Norway, and you cannot know the spoken language. And both of those things were things that I have been trying to attend to in my life for the last 20 years and been blocked at every turn. So when I got a chance to do it in this manner, I thought it was perfect because part of my study is in figuring out where the inherited cultural grief manifests within a culture, and nothing brings out cultural dysfunction better than reality television. I mean, it was pretty profound. But I did a lot of ritual and did a lot of inner work to get ready to go, to be able to process everything that I was experiencing. And I had made a list, like a Freya's wish list, Freya, the goddess Freya from my homeland, and I said, if I could do this and this and this and this, you know, and dance with a howling dancer and do some cow calling and sing these songs in these areas and see Gudvang, and I wanted to be able to see the church that my great-grandmother was baptized in. And it was very mysterious how every step of the way, I was only in the show for 3 weeks, four episodes, but by the fourth episode, every single thing on my list, except for seeing a home farm, I had accomplished. So it was pretty spiritual for reality television. It was very, very popular. It got the best ratings of any show that the TV Norge had put on in the last couple of years. But I think it was because of the way that they did it was so kind. There were certainly plenty of material to make us all look wretched because you live with a group of people you've never met that closely, and there's always something. But they made us all look really, you know, they brought the best out of all of us, and it wasn't like that kind of reality TV. They really endeared each of us to the audience. But it's, you know, but honestly, most of the people who kind of consume my work and for whom I do this work don't watch TV. So it was kind of interesting. But it was a lot of fun. And I had a lot of good, great fan mail. And a lot of people who really understood what I was doing.
I kind of had a couple questions maybe about your children. How are you bringing the Norwegian culture into their lives?
Well, my son Jack is here with me today. He adores Spring Grove. It is sort of a mecca. It's become a mecca for us. The way Spring Grove has preserved the immigrant culture has just been wonderful. And Jack has been in Scandinavian dance and has decided he wants to become a howling dancer. And howling dance is sort of the oldest of the dance forms. Some of the moves are taken from the Bronze Age petroglyphs, you know, so, and it's men's solo and women's solo dancing. So it's exciting, it's gymnastic. And he is really interested in that piece. And then I've taken them both over the years to blots and feinings, which are one of our oldest tools in our cultural icons is the horn. There's a bas relief in a cave of a woman from 20,000 BC, and she's got the horn vessel in her right hand, and she's got her left hand on her womb, and there's 13 hatch marks for each of the 13 moons on that, and it's like her face has gotten worn, but she's like the oldest icon, and I feel like she's just staring at me saying, don't forget the horn is the womb, is the wells beneath the tree. So when we do ritual with the horn, it's a little bit like when a Native American does a pipe ceremony. It connects us to our gods, it connects us to the nature deities, the land whites and the energies. It connects us to the world tree. There are three roots at the bottom of the world tree and three wells. And those three wells are what comes together to create the weird, the web of weird that we all share. And when we say words over the horn, whether it's in honor of someone or it's to do a bragiful, which is to boast about something good we've done, we add our words to the well, and that's what creates the urlog for our children. So not only bringing them to ceremony, but also speaking their names over the well ties them in and connects them in. And then keeping them involved in things like Ufta Fest, you know, things like that, Viking festivals and just different things. And it all works its way into their core, and they express the traditions in their own ways. And they'll teach their children these traditions too.
What's your favorite part of the Norwegian heritage?
Wow, my favorite part of the Norwegian heritage. I think probably the preservation of the songs, that there's so much information packed into these songs. I told my mother that I was going to study the Volva Kona, the staff-carrying woman of our ancient traditions going back to the Bronze Age, and she goes, oh, that's exciting. Well, hold on, let me see if this will help. And she goes into her piano bench and she pulls out Mike and Elsie's songbook. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, thanks, Mom. I'm not sure that's going to help. But I open it up, and the first song in there, Skjæringa med staven, which means the dear lady with a stave. I mean, there she is in the immigrant song. Everything about her, the churning butter, magical butter recipes, and the lineage, and the fighting the mountain trolls, and understanding that those trolls, those giants were the first beings on earth, all in this song, this little kid's song, you know? And that, to me, I think has been the luckiest part of the Norwegian heritage that I have, specifically the Norwegian heritage. But I love all parts of it. I had a woman who said, Kari, you're not going to really understand the music until you do the dances. So I began to do the dances, and she was right. I mean, everything that we do is an expression of the folk soul, the living folk soul. If you don't know, I had an Ojibwe elder one time said, if you don't know the language and you don't know the songs, how can you do the ceremonies? You know? And so it's the language and the songs and the dances and the stories and all of that stuff that really fully expresses the folk soul.
Well, okay, you are a singer though, and you make CDs.
Yes, yes. I have two CDs with me, and one is called Live at the Capri, and one is Volva Songs. Volva Songs is a six-song EP, and the first song on it is a Vodic women's ritual whisking of the bride before her sauna song, which is just a delightful thing to say. And the second song is from the Voluspa. So the first one's in Vodic, the second one is in Old Norse, and then it's in Norwegian. And then there's a song called Drom the May and Drom me not, silkjokelig pale. And that means I dreamed a dream last night of silk and finest furs. And it's a little snippet that was found sort of tucked into the Codex Runicus, and it was the first known written down tune in all of Scandinavian tradition, and it's just that much of it. But I created a full song to go with it. I imagined that it was a mother who had sent her son Viking. The women in Scandinavian tradition owned most of the wealth, because they owned the cows. Men did not own cows, and they did not milk, because cows were sacred and connected to magic traditions that were for women's purposes. And so they also owned the upper farms, and they kept the keys on their belts, you know, for all the storage rooms. So really, women were the ones who kind of ran the country while men were out doing their hunting and the trapping for furs, and then going Viking, of course. And so a lot of times the younger sons wouldn't inherit, so the mothers would build them these ships and give them a crew and send their younger sons out to kind of make their fortune in other ways. So I imagined that song as a mother singing that she dreamed a dream of silk and finest furs, and that maybe her fine young son's ship had gone off course, and so she sings runes to pull the ship back on course. And that's what that song is.
Again to Kari for her interview and impromptu performance at Spring Grove, Minnesota's Norwegian Ufta Fest. Tune in any Thursday afternoon at 12:30 for more insight on the rich cultural landscape in Southeast Minnesota right here on Culture Click.
Creating cultural awareness and understanding. You've been listening to Culture Click. Support for Culture Click is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Culture Click is produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University. For more information, look us up on the web at kqal.org. And thanks for listening to Culture Click.